This is the Paul Gough Audio Experience, whether you call yourself a PT, a physical therapist, or a physiotherapist. And wherever you're listening to this right now, this is for you. It is me revealing everything I can to help make you a more successful business owner. Thanks for listening. It means the absolute world to me. All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is the Paul Gough Podcast and Audio Experience. Wonderful again to be here. We are back in Britain. We're showcasing and highlighting the best of the best physio business owners in Britain ahead of our big event in London that's happening very soon. We're going to talk to Phil Evans of Urban Body Physio. And I do have a question around why Urban Body, but we'll get into that in a moment. I'm hoping there's a good story behind that. But we're heading to Birmingham-ish area of England to talk to Phil very, very soon. But ahead of the big event, we're heading to PPM Live. We're going to be in London. We're bringing the three-day super conference, marketing super conference to London that's taking place 7th, 8th and 9th. We're going to be in South Kensington. There is now already over 100 people who've got tickets. So this is going to be our biggest ever event that we are putting on in London. Phil's going to be there and many of the people that you've had on the podcast over the last few weeks. So book your seats. If you are in Britain, you need patience. You just want to find a community to be part of. You want to meet some people who understand and get the problems and challenges that you go through as a business owner. PPMLiveUK.com is where you can register for your seat. And if you're listening to this live, because we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, LinkedIn and Instagram live, you can book a seat right now, a silver seat for the lowest price. You've got till Tuesday the 20th. So please go ahead and do that. After that, you can still book a seat. It's just a little bit more expensive. So PPM Live UK. And if you're listening from around the world and you are interested in coming out to the New Jersey event, we're going to be there 29th and 30th. Fly to Newark, Jersey City, which is right next to New York, Manhattan. I'm running a practice scale event in New Jersey. Again, there'll be around about 100 people at that event. So it's a big summer for us. Hopefully we get to meet you if you're listening to this podcast. I know many people do for a few years and then they decide to dabble with the ticket and they come on board and they sort of get to an event and then that's it. You're sort of in, if you like. So please see these events as a way of us getting to know you and you us. It's a wonderful opportunity for you just to come and just see what the community is all about that we've built that is now global, let's say. People from all over the world come into these events. We'll have people from America in the London event, from Denmark, from Spain, as far away as Australia. We've got an Australian clinic owner in London as well this summer. So we're going to have a fantastic time in London this June and New Jersey. The event page for that is paulgough.com/Jersey. We would absolutely love to see you there. So check both of the events out and get involved. Stop being a listener and get involved and come and see us in person. So today I'm going to talk to Phil and I'm going to ask Phil to describe where Solihull is, because I did this with Will. I don't know if you heard the podcast, but whenever, obviously, I've got people who listen to this podcast from all over the world, lots of people in the US, people in Britain, Australia, Canada. And whenever I talk about where I live to anybody in America, their first response is that near London? So wherever we are in England, we're all near London. But I want you to describe to everybody around the world, tell us where beautiful, we're in Britain, tell us where beautiful Solihull is.
Phil. Yeah, so Solihull is about 7-8 miles out from Birmingham, which is the second capital. And it is literally the center of England. And we're about 2 hours north of London. And about, how far from Hartlepool? 3.5 hours south of Hartlepool, something like that.
Everything's a long way from Hartlepool.
Oh god,
everything's miles away. Everything's miles away from Hartlepool. Yeah. Did they pass? Is it? What's the joke in England when you go past Birmingham? Like people in the south. What is it? Where's the line where it's like
Watford Gap? Watford Gap. It's literally the north is Watford Gap. anything above that, and it's like still an hour and a half away from me, Watford Gap. So it's a long way off.
So you've ventured north. You've been to Hartlepool. So we've took you to real northeast England, yeah.
Oh yeah, that was the first time I've been to Hartlepool. Was come to see you.
And I can imagine the conversation with friends when you said that you were heading to Hartlepool.
Yeah. Wow. What takes you there?
wonderful. So we're in Solihull. So tell us. In fact, let's talk about the football first. Who's your team? Talk about the soccer. Who's your team?
Mine is actually.
Yeah.
I'm an Arsenal fan.
Oh, wow.
I was brought up in Kent, and my next door neighbour, who was a diehard Arsenal fan, was like your second granddad, if you know what I mean, like your community around there. So my whole family are Scousers. They're all Liverpool fans. And I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm the black sheep of the family with that.
What was the era? When did you start Arsenal then? What was the era that you...
Bergkamp, Merson, Tony Adams. Those were the days that...
So I actually remember watching as a kid, and I think I might be a bit older than you, just a few years. As a kid, I watched the game where David Rowcastle scored the... Michael Thomas, sorry, scored the goal. It was Michael Thomas, wasn't it? Scored the goal against Liverpool. It was Thomas in 1989 at Anfield for them to win 2-1. They had that gold strip on it with the squares on it or whatever, the little triangles. I remember watching that game. I think I was about 8-year-old, 9-year-old to break my heart as a Liverpool fan. Because that's still my biggest rivalry as a Liverpool fan. I mean, this is the Man United one. I can't stand Man United. But to me, it's why I didn't want... I'm quite happy for Man United and Man City to win the league because I can't stand Arsenal. Because as a kid, it was George Graham was the manager and Kenny Dalglish. And
we haven't won it for so many years.
Nah, I just can't stand it.
So many years. Man City, you need to step aside now. They're done.
That's just anybody but Arsenal.
Anyone but Man City.
Yeah. So it's not Villa. There's nothing like that going on in the family. Because West Brom do well as well.
Are they just been promoted, or are they?
They're in the playoffs. I watched them on Sunday. Yeah.
So my other half's family are all Blues fans who have just been relegated. So that's not a happy camp over there. Yeah. Certainly with Rooney coming
in. Have they forgiven Mr. Rooney yet?
No. Certainly when he came in, they were like seventh or something daft.
Yeah.
And then, you flip that. Look at Villa. They were 17th in October last year with Gerrard, and now this year they're fourth.
Well, that probably takes us perfectly into the conversation that we'll have today. And a lot of what we talk about in business is, you know, marketing. We talk about, obviously, but ultimately, I think where most people's biggest challenge is, and the biggest difference to any business, is the manager, right? And that's what you're watching in a game of football, in a sporting environment. How does a team go from, i.e., Birmingham, seventh, to relegated manager? Right, what happens, or how does, in the case of Aston Villa, go from 15th in the Premier League to qualifying for the Champions League 12 months later? The manager, I bet you it's 90% the same players.
Yeah,
in that team, it's got to be the way that the manager sets the system up. In our case, the business model, runs the playbooks, hires the team, motivates the team, directs the team, guides the team. There are so many things that we can learn from business, or for business, from sport. And it's the same, you know, the same concept. How do you get the best out of your team, become a better manager, become a better leader, more structure in the business, etc.? We'll talk about all of that as we get into it today. So first, tell us a little bit about your business then. Why Urban Body? Where did that come from?
I wish I had a story. I don't. It's just I asked for some help with names of businesses for what I wanted, my vision. And that came up. I was like, this was like 10 years ago, and urban was probably a bit of a buzzword back there. And here we are, however many years later. So, what was the question? What's my business look like? We have,
Tell us your model. Talk me through that. Talk me through your business model, who your perfect patient is, how it operates. Help me get an understanding of that. What would I feel if I'm a patient?
So our perfect patient is similar to yours. It's our 50, over 50s, typical female who is very health conscious, who wants to improve their health, maintain independence, loves yoga, plays tennis, really active, and just very health conscious. So, and there's a lot of those guys in Solihull. So we've hit an absolute market here, because firstly, no other clinic locally actually targets anything like that. They just do a typical, we help with pain. And so from a clinic point of view, there's currently eight of us. There's four therapists and me, if you class me as a therapist, so five of us, and then ops manager and two front desks. So there's currently eight, and we're growing month on month, and going well so far.
So the first time you came to my event,
yeah.
What were the prices again?
I knew you were going to bring this up.
I had to bring it up.
I knew. Yeah. So we all sat around the table at the key, weren't we?
The historic key. Yep.
The historic key. And there must have been I don't know. There was no more than 10, probably less. I don't know how many there were with us.
10 or 12 probably, and max, yeah.
And you went around saying, well, how much is it, how much are you? And I was just a one-man band, and I was 35 quid. And I was technically the lowest in the room. However, there was somebody else in the room which charged 40, but that was for 45 minutes, we found out later. So it wasn't actually. But anyway, that was the kick that I needed from the sheer laughter from your face of how little I was charging. So yeah, literally went home and hoiked the prices up, and we are, you know, over double now, like 5-6 years later. So yeah.
What's it going to cost me to come in now for a treatment session?
So we do various packages, and it varies depending on that individual that's coming through. And it can be, if it's a pay as you go, which we don't want. But if it's pay as you go, it's 74 quid. Packages, it will vary from 59 to 64, depending on how big a package you buy up front.
Yeah, brilliant. I was talking to Will Harlow, 200 quid.
Yeah.
200 quid for an hour. And again, what a benchmark that is. And it's the joy, if you like, of being part of a community like this, where you live in your own little bubble if you're not, you know, if you're not part of something like this, and you do think 35 quid's normal, or you think 40 quid's normal. Now at this point, and take this the right way, you might have got to 45, you might have dared at one point to go, I'll go to £42.50 or something like that. Do you know what I mean? And it would have been a typical sign on the wall that says, due to inflation, due to electric costs, due to the rent rise, I've had to raise my prices. And you're almost apologetic for it, rather than proud of what you do and the service that you provide. And when you hear that you're at 74 quid now, which is fantastic, and we're getting there, you know, we're getting there. If that's a half an hour session, it's £150 an hour. So all of a sudden, the mechanics of the business are in your favor at £150 an hour. But then when you hear somebody like Will of £200 an hour, even his associate, the nonchalance of Will the other day was like, it was outstanding. He was just like, yeah, I'm at 200 and my associate's at 120. I was like, what the fuck? Like, but it's wonderful, because it's getting people to realize, particularly in Britain, you know, we're not good at realizing how good we are. Let's put it that way. We're not good at patting ourselves on the back. We're not good at celebrating. We're not good at probably blowing our own egos up, right? We're genuinely, definitely not encouraged to do that. And I think that causes us to be quite insular, and that's reflected with our prices. And we don't want to be too expensive, because we don't want to offend, or we don't want to irritate, and we just want everything to be like where it is. But I think what's happening in this community now is somebody's listening to this and it's going 70. Well, I'm going to 75. And then you hear Will's at 200. It's like, well, I'm going to 100 after this event. And that's collectively, if you like, we start to make progress, and everybody buys into each other's belief in themselves that helps you kind of change your business. And then with that, I suspect now you're starting to hire more people, better people, because you've got the profitability to do it.
Yeah. I think the big change for me, looking back, it was that it's okay to sell healthcare. Yeah. And you're always brought up with all you're doing is you're trying to help people and help people and help people, which is great. But as soon as it clicked that to help people further, you've got to charge for that to provide a better service. And as soon as I kind of got that concept, it was a complete mindset shift. It's been so much easier to go, well, this is the price now, or this is what I need to charge to achieve X, whatever that is.
What about the I get that you get it, you hear it enough times, and you read the books, and you're on this personal development quest crusade, and your understanding of how business works is probably now night and day different to most people. How do you get that across to your staff? You've got that mindset, but how did you get that across to the now 9 staff that you've got?
So it was a lot of onboarding to begin with. So it was before we started allowing anybody to come on to start treating patients. There was a lot of series of videos that we've done, lots of meetings, and there's so many conversations about money and about the mindset behind it. And because this is what I had to drill into them, that physio is a grudge payment. Yeah. They're paying with, or they've come for an injury that they didn't want, for a service they don't understand, with money that they didn't want to spend. So straight away, and as soon as I kind of explained that to them of how we can help and et cetera. So it was all about value. And my guys are really quite good at that now, but that's taken some coaching, and that's credit to the team, really. because they are now very open to being coached. So it's been much easier to do.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there of what the difference is, because most people would shut it down. So the typical business owner, right, you probably in a world of 1 in 100 physio businesses in the UK that are involved in personal development, who are running a business but genuinely trying to understand how to be a business owner and better at business and how it works and the skills required, in the same way that you've invested in your physio skills, you invest in your business skills. Most people listening to this would have the mindset of, it can't be done, I can't get good staff, I can't get my staff to buy in. And I think the bit that you've done well is you've coached your team and you've allocated time to help them understand, and you've taught them about the truth of physio, not the bullshit kind of let's all go to a conference, happy, you know, clappy, physio's amazing, and this new white paper or research has told us how wonderful this treatment technique is for these patients. When you step out of that and you come into the real world and you understand that, yes, patients don't want to come to physio, it's horribly boring, it's painful, it's costly, it's free elsewhere. And by the way, that's the biggest challenge for any physio in the UK, is you've got such a shit tip of a system in the backdrop that tars all of us with the same brush that does nothing, basically. It's probably the most, if you ran a NPS score on the value of physio in the UK, at the system, at the NHS, you wouldn't like the answers. And unfortunately, people then look at me or you and go, well, I've tried physio, you know, it's all the same. So the mindset of you, I think you've become a coach in your business. And let's back to this football analogy. The reason that the players at Liverpool or Villa or whatever, they do well, is because they've got a good coach who talks them through the game and helps them understand it and takes the time to help them understand the facts of their role and how to play and all of these types of things. But where I'm going with it is, what you have when you have a business owner who isn't coachable him or herself, it's impossible for them to coach their team, if that makes sense. So all roads lead back to the business owner. If you've got a business owner that's coachable, that person understands and sees the value of coaching, and that person then brings that coaching to their team, and all of a sudden you've got 8 people in your team who are now 20% better, who are culturally bought in, who get it, who understand it, who buy into Phil's view of the game and what we're trying to do. And you see that in the results of the business. And I think that's where a lot of people in business are very naive to actually, it's not easy, but it is simple, if that makes sense. It's definitely not easy, because you wake up to an email and somebody's off today, yeah. you know they've gone for an interview or whatever, right? Like, patients cancel, it's fucking sunny. We were doing a workshop for somebody recently, and it was like 30 people had registered and the fucking sun comes out, so like 15 people don't turn up. It's like, there's not much you can do about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the unpredictabilities of business, which isn't easy, but in theory, the simplicity of it is what I think people don't buy into. And I think that's what you've done fantastically well, is you've become a coach to your clients, to your team, and you've got them on board.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So since I've stepped back a little bit more from treatment, I've done a lot more one-to-one coaching with the team. And over the last, since I did that before Christmas, whether that's a reflection on results, I'm not sure, that we've gone up significantly in conversions, in utilization, in results for patients, everything. So my job role has definitely changed. And the guys are open to being coached, which is the easiest or the best way. Because otherwise they won't last here. I'll just be hitting a brick wall.
The reason, it takes a lot for people. So again, I think as a leader, it's a great conversation as well, by the way, as a leader, the bit for you to understand that I'm still understanding more is, for them to want to be coached by you, they have to feel safe with you, and they have to be vulnerable, and they have to be okay being vulnerable. Because for somebody to open up and say, I want some help and I want some coaching, they have to actually admit that they've got a problem, right? In theory, they have to admit that they're not as good at something as they would like to be. Now, that's a big deal, right? And that's massively underestimated, particularly in healthcare, right? Or any, I'm going to take it out of healthcare, any service-based lawyer, doctor, OT, PT, you know, vet, anybody that's kind of gone to school for a qualification, they've come out, they're the bee's knees, there's your reward, there's your graduation ceremony, all that shit. Now you're the dogs, right? And now to come into a business and be told, actually, now we need to learn this, and this, you either shut that down or you go, I get that, Phil. So I think what you'll have done very well is created a safe space for them to either come to you and be vulnerable and open about that. Yeah. But B, I think what also makes the difference is that you are living a type of life that they want. and yeah. the way you hold yourself, the way that you are at work, you'll be calm, all of these types of things. It's like, I want a piece of that, and I'm willing to be coached by Phil because he's congruent, he's consistent, he's calm, he's good at what he does. And I like that, and I want to be part of that. And I found that that's the reason that staff either buy in or they don't over time.
I actually showed them, there was a YouTube link on Simon Sinek was talking about leadership and talking about that exact thing about the best teams are the ones that they trust their leader, and they're in a circle of trust where they can be vulnerable. And I showed it to the guys. I was like, do not look at a leader being just one person. I want all of you to think yourselves as a leader. And what does that look like? So they can all work on themselves as individuals, not just in the clinic, but to grow outside of, you know, outside of it. So that went, that was about a month ago, and that worked really well.
I was talking to my team recently about this, the idea of leadership, and we talk about it a lot now at the size of the company, particularly the, you know, Polgolf Media, with a number of staff and clients around the world. So leadership, to me, I've got to breathe it into my team, and I've got to pass it down. And it's kind of like a ball. It's, I'm passing it down, and I've got to feel it come back up. And there was a couple of things I said to them. Everybody's got to be a leader of one. So you can come into this place, and you can maybe not be a manager, and you might not manage five people, but you have to be able to lead yourself. Like that's just that's non-negotiable. And it's the first little filter that I run everything through. If you can't manage yourself, and we're always walking you off a ledge, and we're always dealing with your emotions, and we're always dealing with your drama, like you're no good to us. Like this just isn't going to work, and it's not my responsibility to fix that. The council will take that responsibility, the NHS and the unions and all of that shit will take all of that responsibility, but that, I'm sorry, I haven't got that in me to do it. I'm not very good at doing that type of thing, and I don't think a small business can deal with that. The second one is when you start to think about your leaders. We can have all of the formalities of leadership. We can have positions, we can have an office, we can have a resume, we can have a title, a badge, whatever you want to call it. We can have a position. But at the end of the day, the best leaders in any business, and this is what I've sort of rallied my team around lately, the best leaders in any business are the ones who look at the situation and go, that's not fucking good enough. I'm going to fix this. And I, even though it's not my remit, and even though that's not my job title, this thing that's happening in the business isn't good enough, and I'm going to fix that. And I'm going to come to you with a solution. And if you get people like that in your team, you'll move mountains together as a business. And you don't need to have the, you know, the badge, but if you encourage that and foster that in your business, I think you'll have a wonderful place that you look forward to coming into working with every day.
So I remember the days of me answering all the calls, returning all the emails, seeing everybody, you know, being the admin and the practitioner. And when you're in practice by yourself, that's all you got, just yourself, right? As you're growing and you're scaling to bring other people on. And one thing that I always found so challenging was rescheduling people. And it starts to add up the more people that you have. So one thing that has saved us a ton of time recently and really increased our conversion percentages online to new patients is making the switch over to PT Everywhere for my local practice, Athletes Potential. We actually saw our new patients that were booking online numbers double in the time that we've actually implemented utilizing their platform. And the reason why, it's so much easier to book online. Many times people have to create accounts and it's difficult for them to actually save an appointment. And as we switched over, what we saw was these numbers jumped for us and we got more people online, which saved our administrative resources. It allowed them to pick a time that worked for them. And overall, it's been a very seamless transition. So if you're looking to leverage a platform to help get some of your time back, I would recommend PT Everywhere. It'll save you a ton of time on the admin side and help get more people in the door. Head over to PTEverywhere.com and check out their platform and how it can help you.
So leadership, what's been your biggest challenges? We've been in business now nine,
yeah, a little while, but I've only really had, well, it depends when your class is being a business.
Let's go back. I like to do this. Let's go through the phases, let's go through the gears, let's talk about the first couple of years, and I try to make it relevant to the listener. So if I've got somebody listening to this now in the first 1, 2, 3 years of business, fledgling, getting started, getting the phone to ring, just putting their first Instagram posts up, putting a website up, whatever. What was the biggest challenge for you in that first 3-year period where you were just Phil building his reputation?
So if I look before I went into this full time, I was part time at Loughborough University, which is about an hour away from here, and then doing a bit of treatment on the side. And I did that for years, in fact, and then got to a point where, you know, different stages of your life, you go, right, I want to have children or whatever. Time is your biggest your biggest factor here and you want more of it. So I left Loughborough and just threw myself into my own business. And I was, like most at the time, living off reputation.
Yeah.
And that only gets you so far. So I actually seeked out various, like, how do I grow a business? And I've always been very open to being, looking for answers, reading books, being coached, etc. So I remember trying to, like, God knows how many years ago, trying to put my first Facebook ad out. And so we did a load of Facebook stuff to begin with. And at that time, they were quite, quite good, but it was just me. Yeah. So I was answering the phone, I was treating, I was doing the payments, I was doing the accounts, I was doing everything like that. And then I decided, like with most physios, they think they need another therapist. And so I got another therapist, but I did it on a pay-as-you-go sort of, as you do. I'll give you a pay, pay per person. And that didn't work. It didn't work for me. And possibly I didn't want to let go. Possibly, you know, you look back, you're like, why didn't it work? And I think the biggest thing that didn't work for me is because I didn't need a physio. I needed a front desk.
Yeah.
I needed somebody to organize the business. I needed someone to answer the phone. I needed someone to talk to patients and provide a really good service. And that's when, after COVID is where it really pushed on. So from COVID of 2020 onwards is where it's really accelerated from me and a physio to now 8, 9
What did
people.
What did COVID do for you then? Did it, was it a time for reflection or take stock, or like what did COVID do?
COVID was a real mixed bag of emotions, really. You have no idea. Overnight you shut down, aren't you?
Yeah.
So your cash flow is just stopped. Because of where I was in a gym. I didn't get any sort of grant. I didn't get anything from
the because you didn't have the postcode or anything. I get it.
I didn't have that. So I got nothing. So, and the way that Boris was looking after things was like, oh, we'll review in 2 weeks. So you're like, oh, we might be open in 2 weeks. Oh, we might be open in 2 weeks. And this just kept getting dragging on and on, didn't it? So we were shut for 3 months. But in that time, I actually started to really enjoy it. I was off. I was writing. I'd recently had a daughter, so I was having time off, and I had 3 months off from my daughter. You'd never have got that. So a lot of that was actually quite nice, albeit stressful at the time. But once I got my head around my finance, going, look, I'm good here. Yeah. Let's just get through this. Because of the lack of appointments for the world. For physio, as soon as I opened the doors, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's got so busy since. And so that's when I was like, right, I need front desk. And then that front desk was actually Karen, who then turned into my ops manager. And we've just grown really quite fast since.
I think as you think and listen to that, there's a almost like a taking stock of a situation that COVID provided for many people. That you've got to look at your situation and think, okay, what do I want? Because as I was listening to you, and I go back to the first 2 or 3 years as my kind of solo Paul, if you like, back in the days, it was easy to get the patients. And it was sometimes 20 patients a day. I've told this story before. I was driving between 2, sometimes 3 clinics from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night, Durham to Darlington to Gisborough, literally, you know, KFC on the way home, that kind of lifestyle. Natalie's, we used to have a Sunday and a Wednesday relationship. It was the only time I used to get time to see her. And at the time, I think the biggest challenge that I had was I don't think I could think past what I was doing. I wasn't thinking big enough because I'd never seen anything. I'd never really understood what it took to grow a business. I just always thought I'm just going to be a solo practitioner. I'll make good money and I'll drive around and I'll tweet people and I'll do all of this stuff. And then something clicked that I got turned onto business. And there was almost like this light bulb moment that went off that was like, wow, like, look at what we could do here. If I've got this demand for all these patients, like, what's stopping me growing this business? And it was then people. Ultimately, it was the biggest challenge was, can you think big enough? Because if not, you're just cocooned in this little, Phil's doing nice, you know, making this up, making 50, 60 grand a year, whatever, right? Like, we're doing nice and it's all right. Then all of a sudden you take stock and you're like, oh shit, but what if I can go and build a real business and it's, you know, 500,000 in revenue and I can sell this thing for 1 million or 2 million at the other end, right? You're starting to think much bigger about what your organization needs. So we've moved on from that phase. We've moved from Phil the physio. That should have been your name, Phil the physio.
Yeah, it was in my way. It was.
I was telling me, yeah. Tell me that wasn't your website back in the day, Phil.
Oh, no. No. No, 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 no. You just get known for it, don't you?
Phil the physio. We move into hiring patients. We're in, let's say, like four now, and it's phase two. Hiring clients, hiring staff. What was the biggest challenge as you entered that phase? Now you're moving into business owner mode.
Yeah, I think it's a mindset shift you're new to. It all comes down to leadership, but it all comes down to you don't learn this stuff. You're not taught how to lead. You're not taught how to run a business, and it's getting used to having that. What do they say? Every level is a new devil, or basically you just have like imposter syndrome, don't you? And so you just start again going, whoa, this is new. How do I? And you just become a problem solver for a lot of things now, which is fine. So the next stage was a lot of hiring, and some are still here, some are not. Yeah. Some were good hires, some were not. And you learn from every single one of them. And it's also just having that courage to hire, to employ, to look at that payroll, and at the time going, whoa, that's big, to now going, oh, that's fine, it's normal. It's just whatever the new normal is, and I think you just grow with it. There's always gonna be a challenge, and just try and enjoy it, I guess.
Do you think that's the problem, is people look to grow and they're not ready for the challenge, they're not ready for the problem? Is there a fallacy that they always think everything's going to be, it should be easier, it should be simple, it should be always going their way? And is that why people don't really kind of move through the gears in business? Because they're just, the first challenge hits them and it's like, oh, this isn't going to work for me, and I retreat and then I wait again.
Well, definitely. I think that's definitely the case, but also people get comfortable.
Yeah.
And so they get comfortable earning their 50, 60 grand or that's, they're fine with it. And that's no problem if that's what they want. But if when you ask the question, what am I capable of? Where could I take this? That's a whole different question, and that's where you have to push yourself out of that comfort zone and make mistakes, but hopefully learn.
I think when you talk to somebody, I'm trying to explain this, but you talk to somebody who is tells you that they're happy, mm-hmm. and they tell you that they're comfortable, right? But then kind of 2 minutes later, they're telling you that they're unfulfilled. They wish they could go on holiday, and they wish they could have this car, or they wish they could send their kids to private school or whatever. I think there's such a disconnect between what people actually say. I'm happy with the 50, 60 grand. So in my world, to bring that into my world, we could have somebody at London in 3 weeks who is making 50, 60 grand, right? Who comes to an event about growing their business. Then after it'll say, oh, I'm happy. I'm just going to stay where I am, right? And they won't do anything. Like, if the fact that they're not going to do anything tells you that they're happy. But then you'd sit with them and say, but why did you come to an event about growing your business? Because I ain't going to a seminar about tooth pain when I ain't got tooth pain, right? I'm not curious about how to put an implant in my tooth if I don't want one, or in my mouth if I don't want one, if that makes sense. There must be something that's irritating at me saying, I think my teeth would be better if I had some implants. So I'm going to go to the seminar about implants. But if I come to an event and I say, oh, I'm happy and I don't really want to grow, I think that's so sad when you hear that, because externally they're telling you that they're happy, and you know internally they're not. There's an itch and a scratch. And largely a lot of what I do with the podcast or the books or anything we do is like we try and expose it that like we're all going through this together, that the ultimate skill that you need, that you've described there, Phil, that you've got in abundance. Number one, you've got to coach your team. But you also have to have a level of resilience. And I think that's the bit, if everybody understood that really the skill and the sort of the thing that you're mastering over a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years is resilience. That we're all getting smashed in the face. We're all getting let down. We're all getting emails off staff quitting. We're all getting a complaint off a client. We're all getting like an issue somewhere with the interest rate or the banks or the government or whatever they're going to do when that fucking thing changes in November. Can't wait for that one. You know, we're all going to wake up the next day with fucking, oh, let's see what we've got to pay now. Do you know what I mean? The insurance or tax or fucking whatever they're going to smash us with when that changes in November in both countries, US and UK, listening to this. That's just part of the deal, and it's always been that way. And I just think, I always wish people understood that part of the journey that you go on as a business owner, it's actually to learn that skill of resilience. And that's the bit I think you get so much confidence from in your life, when you realize you can deal with shit, variables and things going wrong. And, you know, that's, for me, has always been the biggest challenge and the best thing that I've learned from business.
Yeah. So I think with that, though, that comes with the emotional control that you need. You've got to be consistent, even when things are going bad. You can't let the staff know, or you just got to be the same when it's good, when it's bad. It's just all consistent.
I had a chat. I was in an event here in the US last week with a clinic owner from New Jersey, and there's a sort of situation brewing in his business, and he has to move premises, and it's getting tight, right? It's getting like he got served notice, and he needs to leave in, I don't know, June or what, end of July, whatever it is. And a few things have fell through, and it's like, oh shit. Like, what do we do? And he's like, do I tell the staff? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I said, I don't think I would. And he's like, he's got this sort of need to want to tell them because he thinks he's obligated to do it. And I said, well, what difference is it going to make? I said, all that's going to happen is it's going to make the situation worse because they're going to come in every day asking if you found a premises. And I don't think at first he agreed with me, but then we talked it out. And I said, look, like, there's just no need. There's no, like, nothing's going to happen other than we're going to turn this into an emotional. Whether they know or not, is not going to make any difference to your ability to find a solution. If anything, them coming in every day asking, have you, decreases your ability to do this correctly, decreases the relationship at home because you're getting stressed and worried and the, you know, cortisol and stress levels are going through the roof. So you need that emotional control and you need to be able to handle things and events going on around you that many people others would struggle with. You need that restraint that people haven't got as a general rule. And I think that's part of what is being a leader and being a manager, not just of your team or your business, but of yourself, that when things do go wrong in your business or unexpected situations happen, you're able to control it. And nobody really should know. My view of it is nobody should know what's going on in your life based upon your emotions. It's like, there could be shit going on. You wouldn't know. There could be amazing stuff going on. You wouldn't know. And I think if you could get that restraint in your business, it sets you up. Or if you get that restraint in your life, it sets you up to be very, very successful in business. So what's next for you, Phil? What's going on? What's next? What's the lofty goals? Where are we headed?
I actually did my goals about a few weeks ago. So the plan is for me to stop treating by the 1st of August. So yep. I'm actually transferring people across now. So I only do one day a week, but that one day I'm seeing like...
How's that 18, going?
18, oh, terrible. Like, you know, I love helping people, love treating people. Like, but it's also, you get so frustrated because you've got so much to do and there's so much more. Anyway, it's happening.
How's it going both emotionally and practically? How's it going emotionally at your level from the handover and practically from them actually
like
receiving,
you know,
the news that Phil won't be treating them anymore?
Yeah, you know what? It's actually quite a mixed bag. So it's definitely what I need to do. And I'm really pleased I'm doing it. But on the flip side, I was speaking to someone the other day and it comes back to your identity a little bit. And so I've always been a physio. And then all of a sudden, what I want to be is a business owner or a business operator, which I am, but that's what I want to do and eventually just become a business owner. So it's a real conversation that you've got to have with yourself about the identity, and it shouldn't be, but you have it. And so there's a little bit of me not letting go, which I definitely am now, because there's so much I've got to do, because I'm so much clearer as to what I'm trying to achieve. It makes sense, but I've got to get rid of this. So the conversations with the patients, some brilliant, some don't understand. Some are, oh, are you retiring? Some are, oh, are you going to just move away and buy a plate? Like, and some ridiculous conversations. So you have, I don't know what they think in their world that how much we earn or whatever. So it's like, yeah, I'm definitely not retiring.
You're a business owner, Phil, you're rich. Just ask Keir Starmer. Just ask Keir Starmer.
Exactly.
You're a business owner. You're rich.
Here's my money.
You're greedy. And you're a fat cat, and you need to pay your fair share for all this green energy shit that they want to build. Yeah. And you know whatever it is that they want to do. It's ridiculous. But you're in the eyes of the public. Don't forget, business owners are all rich.
Yeah. So it is ridiculous. But as I said, it's real mixed emotions. But it's going really well. My staff are fantastic. So it's not like I'm transferring them to transferring some fantastic team. So that's happening gradually with certain people. And that'll be the 1st of August when I'm done. I'm actually away for a couple of weeks. And so in the next 12 months, I want we're really digging into the processes and systems that in 12 months, if the question is, if I want to go again, I can go again, but it's not with me in it. A second location. Because if I cannot get out of one, I'm not doing two.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest goal. And if that goes well, you know, two, three, four, whatever, over the next 4 or 5 years.
I love the idea of the identity. And that's what I'm just going to touch on that that was the game changer, I think, for me. I got introduced to, and this is, I don't know if you've come, Tony Robbins, you come across some of Tony, you've probably heard me mention Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the very first things I learned from him that was pretty profound was the idea of the biggest driving force in any individual is their identity. And we give ourselves that identity. So when we kind of close our eyes, it's like, who are we? And it was, some people have an identity as a mother, some people identity as a father, right? So they're like, they want to become great fathers, they want to become great mothers, or they want to become a good friend, right? Whatever it is. And whatever your identity is, and if you think of yourself as a physio, you become a great physio. If you think of yourself as a great mother, you become a great mother. Think of yourself as a great dad, you become a great dad. Like, that's kind of how it works. And the thing that I had to learn, and Tony didn't teach me this, this was further down the line, but it was the ultimate place to get to in your identity is as a learner, because it trumps all of the things. So If I'm at the identity is as a learner, and I'm somebody who wants to learn, not like just, you know, not just reading books. My version of learning is make mistakes, deal with challenges, pick yourself up, learn from it, off we go. Reflect, go again. Reflect, go again. That's the real learning that takes place. I don't believe that much learning takes place in a book, right? And that's, there's business owners like, oh, I'm always studying this. It's like, yeah, but make the fucking call, right, dude?
Yeah.
Get it wrong. Like, get the criticism, get the bad review, get the quit, get the higher wrong, like lose the money. That's where you fucking learn about yourself, the resilience and reflection and all these types of things. So if you have an identity as a learner, I can use that as a dad, right? I want to learn how to be a better dad. So I can still be a great dad for my kids, and I can still be a better partner for Natalie, and I can still be a better son or brother or whatever if I'm a learner, because that identity becomes any situation that I'm in, I get to learn something from. And the only way that I'm going to learn is if I make progress in all of the situations that I'm in. So the two fuel each other, if you like. So when your identity at the top of the mountain is the learner, well, I'm going to keep learning about business. I'm going to keep putting myself out of my comfort zone. I've got number two in my head in 2 years because I want to learn what it's like to set up a second clinic. And if you have that as your kind of North Star, what I talk about quite a lot, I think you propel yourself without even realizing what you're doing. So maybe it's a little tip for you, get to the highest mountain that you can in terms of your identity, and never forget that really the real learning takes place when you're in the game and you make the mistakes. And it's like, okay, like, what can I learn about this now? What, you know, what's the situation teaching me? Not what's the textbook teaching me? And yes, you've got to read the books, and you do, and I'm not, you know, dissing any of that. But the books really are about preparing you to get into battle. And then it's in the battle, you know, that you sign the lease or you hire those two people and they don't work out. Like, that's when you get to learn something about yourself. So do you think you'll, can you see yourself selling? Can you see yourself sort of building a business in a way that there's two or three clinics and
I don't know.
Booper comes along and says, we'll have them off you, Phil, and there's a million or two. Thanks very much.
The plan is to get to a point where it's saleable, i.e. I'm not in it.
Yeah.
So if I'm not in it and I want to go again, I can still go again. Not sure, but possibly. But then if the business is making me some decent money without me being in it, why?
Yeah.
So it's, I'm not in a rush. I'm not planning, but if enough people come knocking on my door and want to buy, you know, I'll have to be daft to not consider it.
I think it's something even internally in the community, in the Paul Mastermind community, I don't think we talk about it enough that I'm probably going to start dropping the seed a bit more. There is an argument to say that there's no point starting a business unless you plan to sell it. You won't find very many very successful people in business that you would want to emulate or you would want to be like or that you admire or that you've read their books or love their story. You won't find many of them who didn't have the mindset that said, I started the business with the pure intention of selling the thing. And like, to a lot of very high achievers, it's nuts for people to think that you'd start a business and just slog your guts out for 30 or 40 years and not get the reward at the other end, and start to separate you Phil, the business owner, from like the entity and the asset called the business that makes Phil 100 grand a year salary or whatever, but also could be sold for a million or 1.5 million at the other end in 5 years or 10 years. And I just think if you start to get that mentality early, I certainly wish I got it. I wish I'd got it faster, and I'm starting to get it even in this business, in my agency. I make no hesitation in saying that the Physio Funnels brand is a brand for a reason. It's getting set up as a separate entity from Paul Goff, who's the coach, right? And the mentor, who can still do his seminars and still write his books and still have fun with these types of things, which I love. But but there's an agency getting built along the side that over a five-year period could be worth something to a big agency, like a Gary Vee style agency that goes, we'll have that. We want a niche-based marketing agency that we'll roll up and put into our, you know, into our wheelhouse, if you like, that is all over the world. So I'm not saying I'm going to do that, but I'm saying it's crazy for me not to think that I could do that in 5 years and sell that thing off and still do other things that I, you know, that I want to do further down the line. So I think you should, you know, be thinking like I think it's good for you to think like that and for everybody to think like that, because again, the vision just got bigger and it's dragging Phil to higher places and helping him make bigger decisions, and he's thinking bigger about his business. And I can't ever think that there's a situation where when you think big, it doesn't win. You know, you don't win. I think it's Trump's saying, it's some version of most people think small, I think big. That gives me a distinct advantage, and I love that. You know, whether people like Trump or not, whatever, right? But it's a wonderful way to think about your business, is that everybody around you is thinking small. They're still thinking 40-pound sessions. They're still thinking of themselves as physios. They're still struggling with hiring a receptionist for five. There's like, there'll be 100 people listening to this podcast in absolute turmoil, Phil, over hiring a part-time receptionist for 16 hours a week on £12 an hour. Turmoil. Like, for 6 months. And you forget how far you've come. That's, and I mean this respectfully, that's your competitor. And it should thrill you. It should thrill you how far you've come when you're dealing with such, shall I go second or third clinic and sell this thing out for a couple of million in a few years. It's like such a journey that you're on.
The relief when you get a good member of staff is unbelievable. The pressure that gets taken off you when they are performing and they're the right fit, the right culture, is like, wow, why didn't I do this earlier? Every time.
I think, again, resilience. Don't think you can do it. A lot of people will admit it on the call. I just, nobody taught me how. I'd never had a scorecard. I never knew how to do a job ad. I never had to do an onboarding. It's just the basics. Well, I never knew.
Neither did I. I didn't have a clue.
I didn't know how to treat an Achilles tendon until somebody fucking showed me how to do it. Like, just, I didn't know how to rehab an ACL until an ACL doctor sat down with me and went, well, let's do this and stay away from these exercises. And after week one, do this. And week two, it's like, oh, that makes sense. So I just need to do what I did to become a good physio, to become a good physio business owner. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, well, I can do that. So, right, last question. You've been around for a little while. What's the number one thing most impactful you've learned from me? I always like to try and get you at the end. But help me, ego. How have I said something or done something that's really impacted you? What is it?
I don't know if this is a cop-out. I'm going to say not to take life too serious.
Love that.
Something along those lines, and to kind of laugh along the way the journey. And it's the journey that is the biggest part rather than the result.
Music to my ears. And I love it. And I don't think it is a cop-out. I think if you genuinely can live that type of life and you aim for that type of life, which again, let's separate it. Most people don't even know that that type of life is achievable, like that it exists. They've been conditioned from the get-go that everything's a problem. Everything is serious. They put the news on. There's a bomb going off everywhere. They ring their friend. There's a fight going on in somebody's house. They ring their parents. They're having an argument. They see their kids having issues at school, or their friends' kids having problems. Like, everywhere they look, there's a seriousness to life. And I think it's the biggest mistake it's not even a mistake, it's a tragedy that people live their lives so seriously. So I think if you have that as your little North Star, remember to laugh and play and have fun and, you know, all of these things along the way that you're learning about yourself. The business success is one thing, but if you're miserable because of it, or you're rich and you're ugly at the other end, if you like, well, what's the fucking point? And I think to have fun and to enjoy it and not take yourself too seriously is a wonderful way to live. So I'm very pleased if that's been the impact, if you like. It's certainly one of my big things that I hope people get from everything that we do. Phil, I've loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. You've been amazing, great fun. And I think, again, it's very humbling for me. I've said this a few times on recent podcasts. It's very humbling for me to watch you and to watch you grow and to watch now you start to really eclipse even things that I did in my business 10 years ago, to watch my students, if you like, come in very early, fledgling, you know, you, Gav, Jimmy, Lindsay, all of the guys that have been around for a long time now, to watch you get to the point of like being an adult almost in business. And really sort of embrace your job as a business owner and your life as a business owner and a parent and mix all of those things. To watch that, I can honestly tell you it's the thrill of my life. And I think even over the last few years for me, as I've probably reached a certain point in business where like it was sort of head down and I had to do things and I moved to America and it's like I've stepped away a little bit, not like from the day to day, but away and just reflect more on what we've actually done as a business and like your success and other people's success. And I do genuinely take such both inspiration and satisfaction from it, from what you've achieved. So I think it's amazing. Again, it's lovely to see it in Britain, that people are starting to realize that they can genuinely have fun, that they can make money, that they can grow physio businesses. That's not normal, which isn't normal in a physio business. Such few people in the UK do what you're doing. So it really is a pleasure and a privilege to watch it. And I'm looking forward to spending a bit more time with you in London. We'll have some fun with Robbie Fowler. We'll find out about his houses and his 300 properties or whatever he's got. And we'll talk to him about that as well. And again, just lofty ambitions as to what's possible for us as business owners. So
I'm bringing three of my staff as well, so they're coming fantastic. To be part of the community.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I think we've already got over 100. I think there'll be about 110, 120 in the room, so it'll be great atmosphere, great energy. If you remember this time last year, I said we're going to look to really double, triple the size of the events in the UK, and hey presto, with a bit of marketing, who knew you can actually do it. So but it's like people are like, how do you do it? They'll be like, well, send some postcards, run some Facebook ads, make some phone calls. Like that's kind of it, really. Easy, not easy, but it's definitely simple. So but anyway, you're amazing, you're doing amazing, genuine inspiration, and thank you for taking the time for coming on the call. How can people follow you, find out about you, what's your Twitter, Instagram?
Website urbanbody.co.uk, Instagram urban_body. So reach out to us there.
Amazing. I'll put everything in the show notes. All right. Thank you, Phil. You start. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you for listening to Paul Gough's audio experience. If you're brand new to Paul's world, head on over to paulsmarketingbook.com, where you can get started with his number one best-selling marketing book for physical therapists. Or if you've been listening to the show for a while, you like what you hear and you think that you could benefit from this type of help to accelerate the growth and profitability of your practice, reach out to Paul's team at paul@paulgough.com and tell us exactly what you're looking for. And by the way, if you know someone who would benefit from today's show, please share it with them. And if you've got any questions that you want answered, tweet Paul @thepaulgough using the hashtag AskPG. You can also find all of these details over in today's show notes. All right, until next time, have a wonderful day.